Chicks Live! Comics Chicks is a weekly podcast on Geek Nation, which has been on hiatus for a little while, to be honest, but it's coming back. My name is Kate Kotler. I am your host today, and let's hear it for the ladies that I'm about to introduce to you. Give them some love. Come on! Woo! I'm just going to go down real quickly and introduce everybody for you. The first lovely lady to my right is best known for her work on Batman and Supergirl covers. Amy Reeder rose to popularity on Vertigo's Madame Xanadu and earning her 3 Eisner nominations.
Awesome.
Thanks. Best new series, best artist, and best cover artist. Since then, Amy has moved towards creator-owned projects, the first of these being Halloween Eve, published by Image last October and funded through a very successful Kickstarter. Currently, Amy is embarking on a yet-to-be-announced creator-owned series that will launch in the fall of 2013. It's here for Amy Reeder! Next, we have one of my best friends, Jen Abrahamian. Jen makes video games by day and does the cartooning thing by night. You'll see her in an upcoming issue of Aw Yeah Comics, which launched yesterday. And she's also my artist for my creator-owned series called Max Tango, Canine Private Eye. Let's hear it for Jen! Next to Jen, we have Heidi McDonald, who is an award-winning editor and chief of The Beat and a graphic novels review editor at Publishers Weekly. In the past, she has edited comics for both Disney and Vertigo, including Bone and Why the Last Man. Let's hear it for Heidi! And then I would say that the lady next to Heidi needs no introduction, but she is getting one anyway, so there you go. Jill Pantozzi is known online as The Nerdy Bird and is the associate editor of the geek girl culture website, themarysue.com. She's a journalist and host with a strong social media presence, and she co-hosts the Crazy Sexy Geeks podcast with Alan Sizzler Kissler, who is not here today, Alan. Let's hear it for Jill Pantozzi! Next to Jill is Jenny Frizen, rhymes with prison. Jenny is a comic cover illustrator who lives in Chicago, Illinois. What? She is a member of Chicago's 4-Star Studios. Jenny has created covers for Image, Dark Horse, DC, Marvel, IDW, Top Cow, Dynamite, and more. And she's currently creating covers for Revival for Image Comics. Let's hear it for Jenny! And last but not least, definitely not least, actress and entrepreneur Ashley Eckstein is a voice on the Star Wars, the Clone Wars, and also the founder of Her Universe, the first merchandise line exclusively for female sci-fi fans. You can follow Ashley on Facebook and Twitter and see her entire Her Universe hype. What is with me today, guys? Her Universe line at HerUniverse.com. Let's hear it for Ashley Eckstein! Ashley, stand up and give the audience a look of what you're wearing today first.
Show us what you're wearing.
Whoa. It's our new dress. Yeah. And then, of course, our Princess Leia hoodie.
Which, I don't know.
Your hair. I know. Yeah. My sister did my hair today.
Oh. Yay, sister. All right, so the way that this works is we're going to model this just a little bit after the weekly podcast. Has anyone here listened to the podcast before?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll make you into converts. You'll be clawing for the new episodes of Comic Chicks. I'm going to ask everybody, just going down the line, let's talk a little bit about how you got involved either in comics or sci-fi or both, and then we'll open up the floor to questions. Okay? So let's start with Amy. Amy.
All right. I got in through the manga side of things, I guess. Back in the days when Tokyo Pop was thriving, and they were handing out book deals like candy, and so they didn't know who I was. I barely had any sequential art experience at all, which just means that I entered 2 contests, and I'd drawn 35 pages in my life, and they just gave me a 3-volume book deal. So
wow.
You know, I just really lucked out, basically. It's not like a cool, like, struggling story.
No, but that story is, like, every creator's dream. Though.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome, and I think probably because of that, I take some things for granted. But, yeah, I got noticed from there by Vertigo, and then started doing Madame Xanadu, and the rest is history.
The rest is history. Jen?
So I guess I'm still in that hole, you know, just starting out and getting into things. But a lot of it is, you know, kind of luck and knowing the right people and being in the right place and just having the right kind of creative ideas to communicate with people and being on the same page. I mean,
well,
like, I know.
But that's not how you got interested in comics.
I started reading comics because I found a whole bunch of really old Fantastic Four issues in my cousin's attic. And I didn't even realize that comics were a monthly thing. Like, I just found them and, like, saw this big pile, and I'm like, oh, Dr. Doom is really cool.
You do have a thing for Dr. Doom,
too. I do have a thing for Dr. Doom. But, yeah, and then I just, then once I realized that you could buy new ones every week, I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. So I've been getting, like, 30 books a week ever since.
Just so to give you guys a perspective, Jen is the only person I know, male or female, who pulled every single issue of the New 52 for 365 days for a whole year. Yeah. So let's hear it for her tenacity. Congratulations on those. Not for me. Sorry. Heidi, how did you get interested or involved in comics?
I was introduced to comics I'm from a little different generation, so it was really unfashionable, but my mother read comics, which I found is very common among.
Really?
Yeah, but it's actually, you've talked to a lot of people, talked to a lot of artists, and they will say their mother was the one who got them into comics. And my grandmother.
Today, she never gave us comics.
Yeah, well, oh, shame. I had a cool mom. I mean, that's.
Hey!
No, and the other cool mom. There we go. Yeah, she and my grandmother both encouraged me to read comics, I did not think I would ever have a career in comics, and yet I just got into writing about them for fanzines. It was before the internet, so we typed things out and sent them in, and they got published, and eventually I became more known, and I was hired at Disney to work for Disney Adventures magazine. Which
cool,
some,
I remember that.
Yes, sure, and I was in there going, And
how was that again?
You know, like this. There's that picture of me. I still see people who remember that picture of me. And then I went to work at Vertigo. And, you know, so, yeah, now I run a blog about comics. I write about it every
day. What's your blog?
It's called The Beat, comicsbeat.com.
Who cares about The Beat?
Anybody here? Oh, all right. Hey, all right.
Don't be shy about raising your hands. I'm going to make you guys get up and talk in a minute.
I never know who reads The Beat. But because of my comments, so I'm glad to see all these really awesome people in here who read The Beat. But yeah, that's it. My mother, just to round it off a little bit, I think this is important. My mother's also an artist and a cartoonist at times. She was actually did some underground comics. So, and, you know, that was incredibly supportive. So I'm just really lucky, I think, that I've had such a great, heritage, really,
awesome.
To learn from. So anyway, that's
awesome.
It's my story.
Jill Pantosi.
My mom's also partially responsible just for my general geekiness, because she was into Star Trek, and so I had that just from, like, birth, basically. My brother's into Doctor Who and all that fun stuff.
I'm the only one.
Yeah. So I grew up loving all that kind of stuff, and superheroes were just a really big draw for me. And I didn't actually read comics until, like, the early 2000s.
Interesting.
Because I just never, like, you know, there was that stigma, and I felt weird about going into a comic shop, and, you know, I didn't know anyone who actually read them, so I felt weird about making that first step, and it wasn't until one of my ex-boyfriends said, you know, you like all these characters already, you know, why don't you read these? And so he gave me, like, you know, huge back issues of, like, so much stuff, and I just went right through it, and
I've
been getting them every Wednesday ever since.
Awesome. Jenny Prison rhymes with prison.
I regret explaining this. I can't remember how to pronounce my name. Well, as a kid, I didn't actually read any, like, genuine monthly comics, but I was really into Disney Adventures magazine. It was, like, my favorite magazine. And I was
Heidi's kids.
Really into
Heidi's kids.
Archie, too. Like, we got a lot of the Digest Archies. And then as I grew up, I kind of was interested in the idea of comics, but I wasn't really a comics reader. And then my freshman year in college, my first semester, I took a history of comic book and comic strip art class, and it completely changed my life. I was like, oh my god, I have to figure out how I'm going to be involved in this. And I really liked art, and I hadn't picked a major yet, so I switched schools, and I ended up majoring in illustration. And then when I graduated, I went to the Kubert School, which is a comic book art trade school in New Jersey, so I spent 2 years studying there. And
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was a great class.
What was your first cover?
It was with the first one. The first job I got was Hack Slash with Tim Seeley. I met Tim. I got out of the Cubert School and like tried to find work. I was living in Wyoming, working at a dude ranch. Really random story, but I had family. My sister lived in Chicago, so I moved to Chicago and then just sort of like cyberstalked people in comics. It's like I had gone to San Diego and I did eventually get work out of that, but it all moved so slowly that it's like I have to like meet people face to face. And so I cyberstalked Scott Young actually, and he told me that there was this Drink and Draw, and so I went to that and I met Tim, and literally and I had worked for months trying to get any jobs and I just couldn't garner any attention, and I met Tim that night, and he called me the next day and was like, oh, I liked what was on your business card, and the thing you drew was irreverent and inappropriate at Drink and Draw. Do you want to do a cover for my irreverent and inappropriate comic book? So that was the first job I got, but it actually was the second one that was printed.
It was
by chance. But.
Well, there you go. And Miss Ashley, how did you get involved in science fiction? Ashley is our lone television movie representative over here today.
Okay. I don't know why that didn't occur to me.
Okay, well, I will talk about more of my how I got into science fiction, because I must admit I'm definitely a novice with reading comics. And any advice you can give me on this panel of where to start, because I tend to get very overwhelmed with comics,
we
and
all
I don't
have.
Even know where to dive in. So I will tell an embarrassing story, though, how I did get introduced to comics, because for a short period of time I was a comic reader, and it was New Kids on the Block comics. I was quite obsessed with New Kids on the Block.
And that's pretty awesome.
I did. I had every single issue that they released. My sister's in the back, and she can definitely...
you know they're making a comeback, right?
Oh, yes. I'm very sad that I don't have tickets to
not that I know about
yet.
That.
How do you know that, Jill?
Well, they're hanging tough. So,
yeah. Yes, I'm going to learn to read comics step by step. Sci-fi genre. I was introduced to Star Wars before I really can even remember. Just playing Star Wars in the house when I was a little kid. I wanted to be R2-D2, so I was an odd child. And just always been into it, but more so I had a Disney influence. Our parents worked for Disney, or my dad did, and I think I've seen every single Disney movie known to man, but I just love the fantasy and sci-fi genre always. And then obviously when I was cast as Ahsoka Tano on Star Wars The Clone Wars, and then working for Dave Filoni for 7.5 years now, it makes your mind just explode with all things sci-fi, and I have all sorts of useless knowledge about Star Wars.
Let's hear it for useless knowledge. I think we're all here for the first movie that I can remember seeing in the theater. I don't know. Mom, was it the first movie that I saw in the theater? Yeah. Yeah, and my uncle took me to it. The very first movie I ever remember seeing. All right, so the way that this is going to work is we are talking today about women in comics and sci-fi, which means then we are going to be asking a lot of questions about genre, about gender, and I want everybody in this room to get involved. So anyone who has a question, please just raise your hand, and I will call on you by pointing at you, and we'll go from there. So who wants to be the brave person with the first question? Crickets.
Yes.
In the back, the lady with the arrows in her head.
Yay.
Let's hear it for the first question.
Woo! Yeah, costume. Yeah, great.
All right, so my question is, a lot of you write for the comic book journalism community, and
Jill
Shooter and I have been covering a lot of events where people, fans, have been coming to blows over issues of reputation, of fandom, and women being treated differently. Do you think that that increase is an indication of change, a shift, or do you think that it's sort of like the wrong direction? I don't know. What are your opinions?
What are our opinions on fans coming to blows about the representation of women in comics and sci-fi? What does it mean? Let's start with Jill, because she has an idea.
She grabbed them.
I definitely think it has been happening more often lately, and I think that that's indicative of people like us who are writing about it first, and then other people who maybe just have, you know, their own blog or what have you, or even just on Twitter or Facebook, who see us talking about it and say, you know, oh, I feel the same way, or I feel, you know, slightly different, whatnot, and actually feeling comfortable to come out and say, I don't like this, you know. Before, we may not have had as many outlets to express that, but now, you know, these companies are on Twitter, they're on Facebook, you can go there and say, you know, why are you doing this? This is, you know, alienating a whole group of people. And I think that's the biggest part of it, that people feel more comfortable just coming out and saying, you know, how they feel.
Okay. Anyone else have opinions on this? Heidi?
Well, I mean, I think that's part of, I think Chill's absolutely right, but I also think that it's also part of the gradual final integration process, and, you know, just to give it a little perspective, and I mean, I love when you said you love Star Wars, and, you know, like, I loved comics, or I loved Star Trek, or whatever, when I was growing up, and, you know, we did not have the internet, so I was the only one. I had no one who shared my interest. I was thought of as a freak. Although not my own family, which I'm really grateful for. And so I, you know, forged on, and, you know, and I was homeschooled. So, I mean, I had all this. I was completely isolated from any sense of community whatsoever. And now, when something happens that pisses us off, we pick up our phone, and in 5 seconds later, there's an outrage, you know? So, I mean, but it also forges that community where you can be like, you know what, I'm not the only, I'm not a freak. There's this other cool person who likes just what I like. So, you know, I think it's so healthy. But at the same time, people are... why they have these ideas that we're not... Women aren't going to like the same cool stuff that they like, I just don't get.
Well, I think it breaks down into two issues, which is interesting. What Megan, who is actually a friend of... a lot of people here. There are many of us on this panel are part of a Facebook group of professional female comic journalists, and we talk about this kind of stuff all the time. It breaks down into two issues for me. The first issue being that there's this misnomer. Who here has ever heard the phrase, girls don't read comics? Raise your hand. All right, that's the first part. The first part is the misnomer that girls don't read comics, girls don't like sci-fi, girls don't like video games. The second part is the representation of women in comics, video games, and sci-fi. Whereas women aren't traditionally, haven't been portrayed as being so tough and intellectually deep as the male characters with backstories and things going on outside of their TNA costume and crime fighting. And that's slowly beginning to change. And I think that it's interesting, the thing that I have seen the most of is fans getting an uproar about the TNA costumes. Like whether it be cosplayers being harassed and treated like sex objects, or people, what was the meme with the guy dressed in the armor? What was the character? Do you remember what I'm talking about? Does anyone know what I'm talking about?
Oh.
Yes, oh. It was the Hawkeye. There was a guy dressed in, like, scanty, like, a dude with a hairy chest and a goatee and hairy legs and arms, dressed in a costume much like the new Hawkeye is, very revealing. And why is this, you know, why, if this is okay for women, why don't guys have these costumes too, right? So, and then, yeah, so there's a lot of stuff going on that's showing that there's a change going on, but what do you think it means that, you know, people are getting physically violent over it?
It's tough online because you have people who say, okay, this is the issue, this is the thing I don't like, and here's why I don't like it. And then, much like in, you know, in public and in a real world, there can be the mob mentality that happens, where some people take it and just, like, go off the handle, freak out, send people death threats, you know, see all, and I can't, like, you know, there's been times where I've, like, started, you know, a controversy where I've said, hey, look, here's something that happened, and then all of a sudden I hear a person getting death threats, I'm like, oh my God,
Jill,
like,
you started a controversy?
Yeah.
Say what? Say what? Hey, I've done that too, like, I have any of you read me on Bleeding Cool? Yeah, okay. I have a habit of saying stuff very innocuously and off the cuff and then finding out, like, 3 days later that there's, like, 1,000 comments rallying around wanting my head on a silver platter. Let's storm her house and dig her out of her Doctor Who paraphernalia and cut her head off.
Yeah, but I mean, all those topics get, I mean, You just can't. They get huge traffic. I mean, they just get huge interest. I mean, you know, my blog, my website, I mean, for anyone, for those who don't read it, I cover a lot of different things, but I kind of have a business kind of behind, you know, oriented focus where I put a lot of business news on there. But if, you know, I have some other contributors and like, they get the women wearing pants, and that just blew up, you know? Like, that whole topic became incredibly viral. So, I mean, you know, people are fascinated by gender relations. And I think, for some reason, and I just feel like...
Well, it's because tab A goes into slot B.
Yes.
But I, for a lot of people, sometimes... Tab A goes to tab A and slot B goes to slot B. Okay, all right. I can see this is the kind of stuff that I say that gets me in trouble.
Exactly.
All right,
but,
so.
But no, I'm just saying, I think we're seeing, you know, we're seeing the same clashes that unfortunately happen in the real world have coming to fandom. And it's a part of growth. And maturity, but some people are never going to mature.
Right.
And so, I personally, I mean, it's like I feel so strongly about all these issues. Like, you know, everybody deserves a fair shake. That's my goal in life, my ethos. And I see people getting upset about small things, like, oh, you know, like some character's costume changed. And I, you know, that's such an tiny...
Don't hear us gotten upset over a costume change. Raise your hand. We're not going to judge.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah.
I know you have.
Yeah.
Come on. I've seen you on my Facebook wall.
But you know, and I mean, that's okay. But I mean, really, it's the issues that can be so much bigger. And... you know, like even with you know, Amy and Jenny, and such amazing artists. And, you know, honestly, I mean, I can tell you that if this was 20 years ago, you would still be struggling, you know, to get noticed and to get published, and you'd be, you know, and now it's just, oh, yeah, you know, my three Eisner nominations. I think you've been nominated also, haven't you?
I will say, I mean, for as much as whatever happens on the internet, like, there's a lot of inappropriate everything, but this is... in my opinion, the best time to be a woman in comics. Like, I have never felt like I was, like, I mean, specifically the studio I work in, I'm the only girl, we're all guys. If anyone's appropriate, it's me. Like, nobody treats me like I'm any different. They don't, like, treat me with kid gloves, and they don't overdo it. Like, it's not a thing.
You're just there.
I'm there.
And you're there based on your qualifications, not
and
your gender.
And like you said, I mean, 50 years ago, I'd still be... trying to prove myself, and I don't have to, and that's great.
Yeah.
Like, things are progressing. I'm very happy to work in the industry I work in, and I hope that we can progress even further, because clearly there's some issues to be figured out.
Ashley, it looked like you had something to say.
Yeah, I've kind of noticed where a lot of the breakdown is happening, because from a merchandise standpoint, and this is where some of it, I mean, even with comics, because I've been starting to get into publishing, and those conversations from a business standpoint have been really interesting. And we just don't have the research and the statistics to back it up yet. So what we have is we have online social numbers, which strongly tell us that women are into sci-fi and comics. And we have demographics on television that strongly tell us that women are watching these shows. But what we don't have from a buying standpoint is statistics saying that women are buying. And that's because they don't have it. They haven't done the polls. They haven't done the research for years. So there is no accurate poll out there that they can look at. Because when it comes down to money, everyone needs a statistic to prove that, okay,
it's a market.
Yeah, 60% of these people are women and they will buy. So when they say that girls don't read comics, it's because they have research that is like years old.
Yeah.
Shows that girls aren't coming in comic book stores. And so my question is obviously the culture has changed. Why can't we get new research? For some reason, we can't get people to do that.
You know what? I got to jump in here, actually, because I had breakfast, again, with just a bunch of amazing people who happened to be women who all were into comics, and the same subject came up. And I said,
put your money where your mouth is, guys.
But I would love to. But it's also, like, we have, I think you're right with social media, but it has to start, you know? And, like, even through all the sites that we all work for or whatever, like, we need to get started. I'm so glad you brought that up. It's really, really important.
because at the end of the day, it does come down to money. Yeah. And so even though the social numbers are there, if they don't have proof that, okay, this amount of girls are buying, then there is a breakdown and there's a disconnect. So how do we get those statistics? And that is polling and research.
Yeah,
somebody
and
has to
money.
Fund that. And nobody is willing to do
Marvel
that.
So,
yeah,
and,
right?
Until they do that, they're working off of old statistics.
Yeah.
Ladies, how many people, just the ladies, how many of you pull comics every Wednesday? Raise your hands. Ashley, we'll convert you, don't worry.
I know, put me on a plan.
All right, Amy, do you have anything to add to this?
I wish I had, I feel like everybody's saying really valuable stuff. I was just, when you were talking about the research, that definitely resonated with me, because I totally thought that people did that sort of thing, and I remember when I went on Supergirl covers, the first thing I met with the editors, and I'm like, so what's the demographic between male and female? Because I want to know who I'm reaching out to. And they're like, honestly, we have no idea. That sounds really wonderful,
yeah.
But we have no idea. And I thought, like Heidi recently did something where she was showing like the DC's like sales for the past year. So I was looking at different titles. And I'm like, certain ones, there's been certain like controversies and stuff like that, and I wonder like whether some of the readership drop was like actually a female readership drop, stuff like that. And it would be useful for them to know that. Then if they saw that, they'd be like, oh, well, we gotta try and impress women. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. Yeah.
About women in the industry, just quickly, just so everybody knows, there have always been women in the comics industry.
Yeah.
Anybody read Marvel, The Untold Story? No? If you haven't read it, please read it. It's a really good book. It's about the beginning of Marvel, and as far back as the very first issue of Marvel, there were women working on comics. I've talked to people like Louise Simonson and her contemporaries, and there were always women, and they, much like Jenny's, they always were treated like just, they were there on, based on the merit of their work, not based on their gender. So it's interesting to think about it from that perspective. As far back as the 1850s, there were women making comics.
Yep.
I only say this because I'm in the process of thinking about researching a book. All right, so question here in the blue, you want to stand up?
Well, it's not quite so much a question, it's more like a comment kind of going off of that, but if you look at our society, it's really women that drive, like, cultural, like, pop culture merchandise and things
yeah.
like that. You look at things that aren't even very good, I'm sorry, but Twilight, that has how many movies, books, and merchandise that just went crazy, and then you look at things like Glee, which has concerts and merchandise.
They have concerts for Glee?
Not the past couple of years, but yeah.
I have been to one.
Demographics that are just like, I love this, I want to get into this, but when you look at it, like, Twilight is sci-fi, it's not the best, but it is, and if you could gear that more towards comics and things like that, and more Star Wars stuff that was geared towards the female population, there's a lot of money there to be spent. It's just, you know, if I go to a website to buy a t-shirt, and I want to buy the women's cut, I'm going to have to spend $4 more. Why would I buy the women's
go
cut?
Go to Her Universe.
And that's exactly actually why, one of the reasons why I started Her Universe is because it is a fact that pretty much close to half of all sci-fi fans are women.
I was just going to say,
that's
yeah.
a fact. But
secret
about
fact.
80% of all consumer purchases are made by women. Now, I'm not a mathematician, but I mean,
80% of consumer
purchases
are made by women.
That's and so, it was just no-brainer to me. I literally... I was asked when I first got the Lucasfilm license for Her Universe, and they said, well,
that's so,
women were...
Like, first of all, let's have a round of applause for getting a Star Wars. Because that's impossible.
Well, I did have my foot in the door with the Clone Wars, but I will say, they turned me down twice, and rightfully so. It was because I had to start my own company first. They don't just hand out licenses unless you have a company. And so once I figured out how to do it the right way, then they were wonderful. And they I don't believe that any other company would have given me a shot except Lucasfilm. I will say Lucasfilm truly recognizes their female fans. But they said to me...
And then the BBC did the same thing,
oh,
the same way.
The BBC loves their female fans now. They they sent to me, they said, well, we we've tried to sell women's merchandise before in the past, and it's failed. What makes you think you're going to be successful? And I said,
you said because I'm Ashley Eckstein and I'm awesome.
No. I said because I'm going to ask the fans what they want, and that's how it's going to be successful. And they were like, really? Oh my gosh, you're going to do that? And I said, well, I'm a fan, and that's what I do every day anyway. I'm on social media. Is that if you ask the fans what they want, they will support you. And so from day one, I said to the girls, I said, okay, girls, united we stand, divided we fall. We have a major stereotype to debunk. And that's what's happened, though, is, I mean, all of you ladies, we've all come together. And that's the thing is, they can't ignore us when we all speak up. And
I have to say that I've covered San Diego Comic-Con like 7 years in a row. One of the most gratifying things for me to see this year was the line wrapping around the section of the con floor to go to the Her Universe booth. And then having people, because I bought a lanyard and a doctor.
I know, I love it.
I know, I use it all the time. You're right, it is very, very useful. It normally has my keys on it. Anytime I go to a con, I have my... Anyway, lanyards are currency to press sometimes. To be walking on the floor and have people go, oh, Her Universe, or to see people in the... Like, there was a serious female presence at San Diego. Like, it was visible this year. It was really, really visible, which was so cool.
Yeah.
Next question. Let's, this gentleman here, so please stand up.
So, Heidi, a couple of months ago, reported in the Beat on a, if I understand this right, an industry mentality that suggests that attracting too many women fans to certain kinds of properties drives away the young guys and that they're trying to get to, which is...
Because they're scared of our boobs.
Yeah.
Which is both incredibly depressing and has the ring of truth, and I'm wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
I'll say a little bit, and I would love to get the rest of the panel's thoughts on it as well, but I was talking specifically about Marvel and DC, because I do, I mean, it's just, you know, it's like what everybody's saying here, it's like, you know, well, I just don't think women are interested in that, and then you're walking around, it's like, well, what are this empirical, anecdotal evidence I see in front of me? So people are like, why don't Marvel and DC do more things that are aimed at women and children who obviously like to buy things and genre, pop culture genre material?
I think I had an argument with somebody in the forum section of Bleeding Cool about why comics aren't for kids anymore.
Well, but my specific reason that I wrote this post was that... you have to understand that Marvel and DC, Marvel, Disney, sees Marvel as its division for young boys and men. And that is because Disney has never had a division for young boys and men. So they spent $4 billion to buy Marvel, and they just spent, what, you know...
$4 billion for Star Wars.
So those are boys. Because every princess, their girls that are like, is the biggest licensing... entity in the world.
I mean, interesting.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. So they have the girls. They are done. So they have to keep them separate in order for boys to be able to say, this is my boy safe space.
That's interesting to me because my mom, who's here, everybody, my mom, say hi to my mom.
Yay!
My mom is a literacy professor, and she's often said that it's interesting. There's a ton of young adult fiction for girls. Mm-hmm. There's nada for guys.
There is. I just to follow up, and please again. I was at a thing recently with an editor, and he said, he edits children's graphic novels and fiction, and he said, I keep begging to get more boy protagonists. No one will give me a proposal with a boy.
So for the 13 under, it's reverse gender disparity, like boys are underrepresented. How old are you?
13.
Do you feel underrepresented in comics? Do you read comics?
You're like, well, I do now.
Sorry, guys.
Well, it's interesting the way that we say, well, if we do this, if we make comics more for women, then guys won't buy them. But I think when you say that, people are under a really bad idea of what is for women. It doesn't have to be sunshine and rainbows.
So that's interesting because let me just share a little anecdote, and you probably know about this too. There was a little girl in Chicago named Katie, and Katie got bullied at school she was carrying a water bottle that was from Star Wars, told Star Wars was for boys. And her mom, who happens to be a friend of mine, Gary Golden, and a fellow pop culture journalist, wrote a piece for her blog on Chicago Now. Does anybody here read Chicago Now? Who's from Chicago? Raise your hands.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Pretty good. Who reads Chicago Now? Well, it was a big deal a couple years ago, and like I sent emails to all of my geek friends, my sci-fi friends, saying, hey, Katie thinks Star Wars is really upset because she was told Star Wars was for girls, and I'd like to hear, we had Ashley weigh in, and Bobby Burton, and I think Jill you weighed in too, and Molly McIsaac, and a lot of like really high-profile, geeky sci-fi girls, like, we're like, yeah, Star Wars is for everybody, shut the See, I almost said it, Jill. Molly would have been so happy. All right.
But yeah, no, like, you know, if we take away the really, you know, broke back poses on the covers, is a guy not going to buy it? He still likes, you know, whatever the comic is, you know, is that really going to stop him? It doesn't have to be watered down for what the gender
stereotype is. Do you like those broke back poses?
No,
you're
one's
all like afraid to say yes.
No, as a dad, they're really offensive.
I
bought them for my son.
Yeah.
All right, I think that deserves a round of applause. Yay. Thank you. High five to the back.
Yay.
All right, Ashley, and then
I do have something to add to that, and it's from Carrie's book. To take a step further, Carrie wrote a book called Bullied, and anyone who hasn't read it, definitely check it out. It's amazing and so informative. And her chapter about gender marketing, it just blew my mind. It made me look at it in a different way. And again, everything we're talking about comes back to money. And what I truly believe at the end of the day is all of us in this room, we don't care. We would like the same, we like the same properties for the same reasons, and we're not going to turn away from something because we feel like, oh, that's for the boys and that's for the girls. But what they figured out is that, okay, you have a soccer ball, and they were selling one soccer ball in black and white. And so when a family would walk in and they wanted a soccer ball, they would only buy one because it was gender neutral.
Right.
What they figured out is that they could make twice as much money if they make a blue soccer ball and a pink soccer ball. Therefore, the brothers...
The pinking of technology.
Yeah. Yes. And so that's what happened. That's why you have the pink section and the blue section, because companies figured out we can make twice as much money if we slap pink and blue.
Let's just merge them together and make purple, which happens to be my favorite color anyway.
Yeah. No, but that's also the thing. We've been institutionalized to think of blue as boy and pink as girl. And some of us, as we grow up and we see different things in the world, we realize it's not so pink and blue. You know?
It's not so tabby. Sloppy.
There was in Victorian times, like mauve was actually considered to be a boy's color. Like pale pink was considered to be for boys.
What?
Of course, they dressed them in dresses also, so, you know. But yeah.
I did live in San Francisco, so I have seen that. So.
But it hasn't always been. Pink and blue haven't always been the colors for boys and girls. I mean, this is complete socialization.
Gentlemen with the Chicago cap on, Sam, or lady, sorry.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, lady.
Exactly.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's also
kind of
like, if you think about the Marvel thing, now they're like, this is for men and young boys. It's like when careers used to be, like nursing used to be for, you know, just men, and then women started coming in, and now it's unthinkable that a man would go into nursing. Now it's like, oh, he's so brave going into nursing.
Right.
That's great. That's interesting.
It's like as soon as, you know, it's like they fear that if the women take over Marvel, the men won't want to return. Like, we're
not as long as Stanley's alive, there will always be big boob girls.
I have a question then. So, when bigger companies do comics that aren't for girls, they don't really sell because the girls are even like, well, I don't want girl comics, I want
regular comics.
But that just aren't offensive to me as a woman. Like, that's the thing. Like, it doesn't have to be girl.
Even like, it's like in like what people think women are offended by is really interesting because, like, I happen to love pinup art and like tough girls kicking ass and women and sex. I'm very empowered by that, whereas some women are not. So you just have to have a broad spectrum.
But I think maybe some of the bigger companies get confused because they don't say, well, let's make just compelling stories and everyone will like read them and we don't have to make them about or for anyone specifically. But instead they make, and they call them, comics for girls, and then nobody buys them because obviously the boys aren't going to buy them.
Whereas there's a huge market of dudes who read My Little Pony, which is interesting because that was a
girl. But they also don't call that for girls. They don't say, this is a girl's comic.
But it was initially.
They don't have to. It's My Little Pony, buddy.
Yeah, like, that to me is as incongruous as dudes reading Strawberry Shortcake.
I think that bigger companies then take that, like, fake market research and go, well, we made that for girls and it didn't sell. That means girls aren't reading comics.
Girls don't read comics.
Yeah, therefore, bigger boobies.
You know, I just...
therefore, bigger boobies.
Ergo.
And ergo.
But I just want to point out, it's so important to understand that there is markets outside of these traditional Marvel and DC worlds.
Exactly. Yeah, who reads independent comics here?
Yeah, well, hey.
I have two hands.
Yeah.
They both go up for independent comics.
But I mean, also graphic novels.
I love
from Scholastic and from First Second and like out in the world. Those are just, you know, read in libraries and, you know, they don't say for girls, but girls and boys read them. So, hurrah.
But it's also, I think, important to understand that, like, the bigger companies, and I'm just going to say a bunch of stuff that could be totally inappropriate.
You won't tell anyone.
They see there is a group of people that read comics. And in their minds, they don't say, well, how do we get all these people that aren't reading comics to read comics? They say, how do we get the most of these people that are reading comics to be reading our comics? And then you have these independent companies that are like, well, let's just make good stories because this is what I like and I like to work with these people. And
Hopefully I like
that. People will also like it.
Hopefully the people, if we make it, they will come. Hopefully. A sports analogy at a Comic-Con. Oh my God, what's going on? The world is upside down. Who has a question? Is there a gentleman right there in the press with your nice boy reporter?
Building off everything that's been said before, particularly the comment just now about how we don't want comics for girls, we want comics for everybody that aren't offensive to women. What are the basic principles you all have in creating? What do you want to put in your work to fulfill that? And what do you want to see other people put in their work?
What offends us?
What good things do we want?
Amy.
Well, that's where I come in. Because, like, I've been a little bit quiet, but part of it is that, like, I find whenever people talk about stuff, sometimes I like to weigh in. But in general, like, all I sit and think when I'm sitting here is, I want to do this. Like, that's, you know, I'm a creator. And so, I want to have female characters that are very complex, basically. Like, I kind of have a hard time with the, like, strong, I can do anything like a man, female characters. You know, I want ones that are strong to have an attitude because I have one.
You know what my favorite female character of all time is? Kate Spencer from Manhunter. Yeah. She's flawed and broken in some ways, and she still kicks butt and takes names. Yeah, I didn't say it that time. You know, that's what,
I agree with that. And I'm not a writer, and basically, like, I'm not trying to make a statement when I draw, I just am like, oh, I like this, and now I'm going to draw it, and there it is.
Yeah.
But I think for me, it's never, and this is just my personal opinion, but it's never about how they look or how they dress. It's about, like you said, a layered, complex character, and I want complex stories. And I mean, like I said, the first comic that I worked on was Hack Slash, and it, any of you are not familiar.
Apparently, did you guys see that Cassie is on our panel? Did you see that in the program? Did anyone else see that besides Jen? Jen, tell the story.
Oh, no, I was just seeing who was on the panel so I could meet all the ladies, and I noticed that Cassie Hack was listed. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, Cassie Hack apparently couldn't make it to the conference.
She's busy.
She's slashing. Slaying slashers. Cassie is a kind of like petite punk goth girl that goes around killing slashers. The story is that she's the girl that survived at the end of the slasher movie, and now she fights back. It is very, like, her look is very sexy. But that's kind of part of her character. She doesn't she doesn't take crap from anybody. I also didn't say it. She doesn't take crap from anybody. And Tim Seeley, who writes it, I mean, a lot of people
Lots
may
of
see the art or see, you know, the character, just have an assumption about what the comic is like. And it's not. Cassie's a layered character, and it's tongue-in-cheek. It's very funny and, like, a lot of humor, a lot of horror, and a lot of, like, you know, she's kind of, like, there's a lot of vulnerability there, and, like, it's a great story. And but, you know, when people get all up in arms about, you know, her look, I'm like, but that's not the point. Like, you, I mean, sometimes it's the point. Like, there are definite issues with how women are
Okay, so women in the room again. Who has is there anyone that has a problem with women being portrayed as attractive? Raise your hand. Anyone that has a problem with women being portrayed as sexy, even?
It depends. I have a big problem with the Power Girl hole.
With Power Girl?
Yeah, that bothers me a lot.
You know what? Can I just say, like, I've told this story every time, but I just, when I was a kid and started reading comics, I literally picked up an issue of JSA with Power Girl in it, and I looked at her and I said, God, her boobs are so big. I don't like this. And I put it aside, and I never read DC because of Power Girl's giant boobs. I mean, it does turn people off.
Like, Poison Ivy, it's understandable. She's, like, she's a villain, and she's, like, tempting people. That's part of her persona.
Right.
But, yeah, it's, like, that like, so bothers me a lot.
Is who has women who have a problem with that kind of like the hypersexualization?
Well, it just seemed like
women.
It came out of nowhere. There's no reason.
Like, there's no reason
they made
for
up a reason, but it wasn't legit. In my
it was that whoever drew it, wrong, I feel, wanted to have big boobs on a girl.
Yeah, I mean, and it also it depends on who is writing the character at the time too, and how, and also how they're drawn, because there's people who draw superhero comics, and they draw the women as, you know, as eye candy for the reader. So they face their back to the audience, the reader,
and they're like,
you know, and that it doesn't make sense, you know, story wise. It's there specifically to for that reader.
Women are so sexy naturally.
Yeah,
I think that's the weird part, is that they draw them so unnaturally. It's
women
weird
are.
To me, because yeah, you can draw really sexy stuff and have it be genuine. So
it's interesting to me. This is an interesting thing that if you read Marvel, The Untold Story, did you know that Marvel and Playboy were at one point connected? That Hugh Hefner and Stan Lee had offices right next to each other? Huh. This young lady, and then Megan again.
Right, yeah.
I think large boobs on a character is great. I just think the whole is, like, exploitive. That's all.
We're talking about the boob cleavage.
It's a window. It's a circle.
It's a window,
yeah. It's just open.
It's just open.
For no reason, yeah.
Has everybody here seen Power Girl? Yeah? All right, we all, yeah, okay. All right, Megan. You have to
cover turn you off.
Yeah.
It's actually good on the inside. It's a real struggle. I have so many friends that are like, I'm a strong feminist and I will not support this image.
Who here has turned away a book, has not picked up a book because of the cover portraying women in a disgusting way?
I actually have an interesting story just that happened to us in the last couple months. We get comic company sending us previews of things every once in a while to post on the Mary Sue. And, you know, that's great most of the time, you know, no problem. And we got one in the last couple of months that we looked through and decided that both for us as the editors and for our readers, that we did not want to publish this preview because of how the woman in it was represented. And we knew if we did post it on the site just to say, well, they gave it to us, let's do it, that we would get angry readers at us.
You,
like,
you
why
would lose credibility as a site.
You know, and it was a really weird thing to have to do, because I don't often have to say no to that kind of thing, but it was to the point where we're like, yeah, I'm sorry, this is just not for us. Like, you know the kind of site we are, you know our readers, like, this is not going to help you sell anything.
What did
you know?
They say, though?
I haven't heard back yet.
In the back?
The converse is also true. I bought a G.I. Joe comic from IDW that had Cover Girl, Doc, and Hashtag on the cover. It was a variant. I don't need G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. But because it was such an awesome cover, they were wearing appropriate clothing. There wasn't weird cleavage. They weren't in broken back poses. It looked legitimate. It looked real. And I bought it.
So, I've done that too. Yeah. Jen, we have an interesting debate Jen and I do going on about what appropriate clothing is. We were going to do a vlog cast. What was it last year we were going to do with Lauren Burke of a vlog cast of you? People were up in arms about Catwoman's high heels, ScarJo's.
Running heels.
And she was going to get not just running heels, drunkly running heels. Jen, show the audience your shoes today. Jen may be the
really
exception to the rule, though.
I'm not in a really good place to talk about impractical costumes.
Yeah. who else has questions? Yes.
Do you think costuming or characterization presents a bigger obstacle towards accurate depiction of women in comics?
Interesting. Let's start with the cosplayers.
Let the cosplayer speak.
I don't know if I can pick one over the other, because again, it depends on who's drawing it, who's writing it. I guess the costuming is more obvious, you know, if you're not reading past, if you're not, you know, if you're scanning through or whatnot, that reads first. And, you know, some people draw one character completely different than the other, and one can look perfectly fine in a skimpy costume, and the other can look pornographic, you know.
This is true.
I think kind of echoing that, the thing you see first is the costume, so it's very important. And so I guess if you're trying to expand your reach with this character and actually get people on board to find out more about them, then having something that, you know, people might find offensive is going to be a hurdle for that. So, you know, no matter how strong that characterization is, it's going to be really tough just to get people to even look past that.
I'm going to be the devil's advocate and say the reverse, that it's the characterization, just because, like, I see a lot of characters that look really nasty, but then I try and imagine if I drew them, and I think they'd look fine. So, I mean, like, I just think about Supergirl and how many different ways that she's been drawn with the same costume, and it totally changes based on how she's drawn and how the writer chooses to portray her.
Interesting.
Ashley? Like, this isn't a comic character, but Ahsoka Tano, when she first came out, was a 14-year-old girl fighting wars in space in a tube top. And it certainly was not an appropriate costume, but that's what was given to her. And but I think she was written so well as a female character, and she was such a strong character that people were able to look past it. And so I think how she was written was much more of a factor. And then they were eventually able to change her costume that was a little more appropriate. But definitely, I give them credit to how they wrote her, and wrote her as such a strong character, and people were able to look past a 14-year-old girl in the tube top. But one thing that I have noticed, which is really strange to me, kind of going back to the previous question, is people all the time are so proud to give me their fan art of Ahsoka, except don't give me fan art of a 14-year-old girl and where you've made her chest four times the size, like, given her, like, lowered her skirt where you see a lot more than you need to see, and crazy muscles that aren't necessary. And they're so proud to give it to me, and I'm like, well, and I'm very nice, and I say thank you so much, but then I look at this, and I'm like, why did you need to do this to this 14-year-old girl? It wasn't necessary.
That's a huge issue, too. Age appropriateness of costumes for characters that are younger, like adults, you know, whatever, you're an adult, you can do that, but like, there are still kids reading comics, and to portray women that way in a comic that is, or a series that is highly young audience skewed, thank you, is kind of not a good idea, I think. I think there's something morally reprehensible about that. In the back.
Hi, my name is Patrick. I'm from a group called Geeks Out. We promote LGBT fandom.
Hey, you follow me on Twitter. Geeks Out. Yes.
And we're always having people come up to the booth that are like, oh,
and LG, very much so.
Right.
You should listen to the Comics Chicks episode with Joan Hilty and Mark and Draco. We talk a lot about that.
Yeah. How do you get people who don't identify as women or as LGBT into the conversation and start having them become more aware of issues and sometimes have civil conversations like, oh, dude, I love women in comics. We're like, oh, wait, you know, it's not quite
the same reason that I love
You know, I have my website, and I have been nominated for 2 Eisner Awards, and I am usually, I mean, I probably, you know, top 10 news site, and nobody, I write about these issues quite a bit, as Rob alluded to, but nobody ever says, at least in my hearing, or that I've seen, says, oh, you know, Heidi's got the best blog by a woman. You know, like I have managed through long, hard work to get to the point where it's just
It's about the work.
Yeah, it's about the work. But by doing that, it's because I have really stuck to issues and creativity, and I have not ever, you know, said, well, this is my, you know, I've been pigeonholed. And just, I mean, I hate women in comics panels, okay? And I wanted to do this one because Kate asked me, and I respect Kate so much. But it's also because Amy and I have been on a women in comics panel together before. But, you know, I didn't know the people on the panel. And I mean, you know, if you look at Ashley starting her own business, you know, and Jenny becoming a top cover artist, you know, and Jill working for this amazing website, and, you know, everything that people have done, here, I mean, you just have to not say, you know what, I'm a woman writer. I say, I am a writer.
I don't think that I've ever described myself as a woman writer.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I will say this, writing for a very controversial website for a very long time, I believe that I was treated much differently by readers and also by some of my contemporaries because I was a woman writing for that site. We won't say what side. We all know what side.
And I think it also has to do with, I mean, all it takes is like one person to make somebody aware of something that they didn't know about before. Like on our, you know, on the Mary School of Time, we have these stories, and even myself, who I've, you know, I think I've been exposed to a lot in my life, and you know, I'm open to all things. Like every once in a while, I'll you know, maybe use an incorrect term or something, and someone in the comments will just say, "Oh, you know, just so you know, this is the correct term that people, you know, prefer." And I love that. I love people informing me, you know, so I can then inform other people, you know, and make it more acceptable all around. Of like, hey, this is just whatever. It's normal. You know,
I think it's about communication. Communication is key, and not, you know, if somebody makes a misstep.
And not doing it snottily. Yeah.
If somebody makes a misstep, not doing it snottily, but being very genuine and saying, you know what, hey, one of my very good friends is bi, and she gets really, really offended about a lot of things, but she's not, when people say things in comics that are anti-LGBT, and she's not one of those, oh my god, can you believe it kind of people. She's more like, hey, look, this is the way that you should present it, and you know, she's affected more change that way than by flaming up on the internet and having a million white knights, a term that I really hate actually, but white knights coming to one side and other side and going back and forth. That's useless motion.
And I think it's a real tightrope because you want to raise these issues, you know, that are unique to whatever group it is and that creates diversity. But you don't want to be singled out for that either. So
right. So
it's like, I mean, you really just have to deal with it. But you have to, I mean, it's really important to transcend the group also, and just to I think just talk about the larger issues too. You know,
we're all people is what it comes down to. Men, women, whether you're straight, gay, trans, whether you identify as a woman, a man, or something else, we're all people, and that's what should be the focus. We're running out of time, so I want to take my last question. Who has the last question? Raise your hand high. I'm going to point over here, just because you already asked one. Okay.
I don't really like when they have CDF someone in a comic and say, Drew, or a t-shirt.
Yay!
You drew her a t-shirt? Do you that often? Do you take a Sharpie and color in clothes on them? Can I give you a hug, please?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right.
So everybody that's go down to the Lion Forge booth and tell them that.
Push back on that. Yeah. There's a whole little contingency of adult male readers that are complaining about the fact that we are objecting to skimpy, hypersexualized costumes. And just so you know, 13-year-old awesome girl, that's your name now. 13-year-old awesome girl. You're the reason why we object to skimpy, because we don't want you to think that that's all that women are, because it's not.